This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening. Welcome to The Essentials. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and you are on The Essentials. The reset today is Cinco de Mayo. And if it is Cinco de Mayo, then it's Cinco de Sol. And if you know what I mean, it is the day on which my first princess was born. On this day, a princess was born. She has a unique vibe. Her flow is different. She consistently creates an essence of her own, kind, caring, supportive, and always looking at how to help others. She protests, marches, advocates, plans, lead, and represents so other persons' lives can be better. She makes her own songs and dances to her own music. She is Princess Soyine. A blessed earth strong, may love and light be yours always as you serve the universe with the essence of you, more life. And we say, Ase, 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 Ubuntu and one love. And so this evening, we are going to have ourselves a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about this and a little bit about that. But before that, there is a very, very important election taking place someplace air in the Bahamas, and there are some young men who are vying for leadership in that organization. I'm associated with that organization, and so I'm going to give a couple of them, to the extent that they turn up, a couple of minutes to talk about this, because I think it's important. In a country where leadership is always important at a national level, but in a country where you have an organization which has been going for over 50 years, an organization which has delivered leaders at the highest level of the country, all the way up to prime minister. I think it's important to highlight when such an activity is taking place. So we want to know, who do we have on the line at the moment? Welcome to The Essentials. Good evening. Welcome to The Essentials.
Thank you, distinguished Toastmaster Hubert Edwards. I am distinguished Toastmaster Ray Don Poitier of the First Bahamas branch of Toastmasters Club 1600.
Welcome, Mr. Ray Don Poitier. As a matter of fact, welcome back to The Essential. You're almost a co-host these days. What is it that you're doing tonight? What position are you vying for? Why is it important that we want to talk about this? Give you about 2 minutes to talk about this particular election.
Well, great. What we're doing tonight is we're hosting the Club 1600 elections. Club 1600 is the First Bahamas branch of Toastmasters here in the Bahamas. And since 1969, we have had quite a number of distinguished men take on the mantle of presidency to lead this club. And tonight, I am vying for that seat myself, trying to make history tonight in becoming one of the men in that line of distinguished men to hold that post as president. And why it's important is because we in our country today are in need of leaders, and Toastmasters is where leaders are made. And for young men coming up in this country today, in our society, we need as many leaders out there to guide our young men and women to the next level of their lives, where they can exude the positivity that they have in them. So tonight, history will be made, and we are definitely going to be ushering in next level of leaders in our country.
Yeah.
And just briefly, what Toastmasters does is it's a leadership and communications development organization, and we have several clubs here in the Bahamas, and this Toastmasters year that starts in July 1st, we want to do a lot of things within our community to strengthen our community, especially with our youth. And this is a great opportunity for us to touch the youth in a way that we have been working with them in years past. Our work with the Simpson Penn and Willa Mae Pratt Centers is ongoing, and we intend to keep that going with our Gavel clubs and starting Gavel clubs in schools around Nassau, around the Bahamas, because we know and we realize that we need to touch our youth at the earliest age, and if we can get to them and build their confidence, their communication skills, and offer them mentorship at an early age, they may not make the mistakes that they make in their lives, leading down a path of crime or, you know, any other negativity that they may get involved in. So that's what we intend to do more of in our community. So high schools, primary schools, whatever organizations that we can be affiliated with to help to get our young leaders, even though they may not realize that they are leaders, we want to be able to tap into those young leaders and steer them in a positive way, not necessarily to continue on the route that they have been taking.
Yes, and that is important, and I applaud you for that. I also applaud you for the fact that you're putting yourself up for leadership. I think it's significant that Toastmaster is in focus. I am a Toastmaster, and I wanted to do this. We are having this conversation at a time when, at the top of our political hierarchy, the two persons who lead that, the Deputy Prime Minister and the Prime Minister, are Toastmasters, and that must hold at least some significance, if not for everyone, but certainly some significance for us in the Toastmaster movement. And I think it sends a message. It sends a message as to the place or the efficacy of Toastmaster as a place for foundational training and growth and development when you're seeking to grow your leadership and communication skills. Just take a look. Take a look and, you know, assess them and ask yourself, is there something about them in their times of expressing self, in their times of, articulating, which sounds sometimes a little bit different, you know, like they have some sort of a mechanics going. And so, Mr. Raydon Poitier, you are seeking to become, in the tradition of 1600, the next president. Yes.
And the young men, or the men that you spoke of just now, those men have, they understand the importance of the growth and development that the Toastmasters provide.
Right.
And the organization welcomes young men and young women around the Bahamas to be a part of it. You know, if you have a fair public speaking, if you have a fair of leadership, or you want to become better leaders or better communicators,
mm-hmm.
Toastmasters is definitely the club for you.
Yeah, I am anticipating maybe that one or two other of your colleagues will be here, but we have some time. So when you would have been elected, you have been successful today. You have been elected. When you walk away in 1 year time as the outgoing president, what is it that you want to look back and say, this is what I set out to do, these are the plans that I had in my heart, and I have done it?
Thank you very much for that question. And, you know, looking back, looking into the future, I hope to look back and be able to connect the goals that we set out for ourselves with the achievements that we will make. And my team and I, whoever that team may be, we intend to ensure that the members that come
sound like you don't anticipate that you might lose. Yeah? You know, you're already in there.
Well, you know, I don't ever approach any situation with losing in mind. I realize that it can happen.
Yes.
But I look to the future, and in the future, I'm the president.
There you
go. Looking forward, but once that year is up and we look back at the year, we want to ensure that persons who come through the doors of Club 1600 are able to meet the goals that they set for themselves. Whatever those goals may be, whatever their personal goals are, success for us is a success for them. So if they succeed, we automatically succeed.
Right.
If we can motivate and create an environment where young men and young women they feel as though they have the mentorship that they need to be successful in whatever they do in their lives. If we can motivate them to be better than they were when they came into the organization, that is a success for us. Members come into Toastmasters and they set their own goals. You know, they have educational goals, they have leadership goals, communication goals. And if we are able to encourage them to fulfill those goals, we've succeeded. If we are able to touch young people in our communities and build up our communities and see our crime rates decrease and see more positivity come out of the inner city or anywhere in the Bahamas, if we can see those young people turn their lives around, we have succeeded in our Toastmasters mission.
Yeah, and in a very important way, you know, small as it may be, but with significant reach, the success of a club like 1600, the success of any Toastmaster club in doing that is the success of the country, isn't it?
Indeed, because, you know, we realize that Club 1600 is a microcosm of our country, We are a small group of Toastmasters, but when you look at the bigger picture, you know, we don't take for granted that the Prime Minister of the country is a member of our club and a past president. So even though the club may be a small number, and when I say a small number, I'm talking well over 200 members, but when I say a small number, I mean how many leaders does it take to make a change? Mm-hmm. Just one.
Right.
So if we have 200, I'm sure that we can exact positive change in our country, and this is what we have been working toward, and this is what we will continue to work on.
The last couple of years coming out of the COVID pandemic has been significant for Toastmastering and persons who put themselves up for leadership. Over that course of time, it required a level of flexibility, creativeness, innovativeness. I would say, last 24 months, and certainly this 12 months may very well qualify too. Isn't it one of the most exciting era for the testing of leadership metal?
Absolutely. You know, we had two great years. And when I say great years, I don't mean, you know, going through COVID. Yeah. I mean, COVID allowed us to expand on skills that we didn't even know we had, and allowed us to learn skills that we needed. So being in a virtual environment, being able to connect with persons and clubs all over the world, it helped us to hone in on some skills that we could use even past the COVID pandemic. Now, when it comes down to you know, we may be coming down to the tail end of the pandemic, being able to then connect those skills with being in face-to-face environments, we have seen leaders emerge out of the pandemic, whether it be in their own businesses, whether it be in their personal life, whether it be in their careers. But they have grown, and many of the persons that we see on a daily basis within the club have done exceptionally well in becoming the leaders within our society.
Yeah, and you know, and certainly as we go forward, we grapple with our financial state of affairs. We grapple with the state of the pandemic. We grapple with catching up with the loss of educational opportunities. We grapple with the social fallout. All of these things, we have to prepare ourselves. We have to frame our minds, and we have to get into the mindset that we are doing things, yes, in the first instance, it will cause us as individuals to grow. But we are doing this with a view of serving the country at large. Isn't this really what Toastmaster and 1600 and all the other clubs around the Bahamas is about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're not selfish with the skills that we have. Whether it be Rotary, Toastmasters, or any other organization, at the end of the day, it's about service. So we give ourselves to our communities. You know, we have initiatives like the Neil Percenti back to school event, where we go out into the community of Union Village and we give back a full day of what Toastmasters has to offer. We give back school supplies, haircuts, you know, these things that we do just so that we can you know, give back to the communities, the persons that may not have as much as we may have. And even though we may not be the richest persons out there, we still have something that we can give back. So at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, being able to take what you have and give back to your community, whether it be in communication or monetary, or, you know, even if it's the shirt off your back, something.
Yes. And I think it's so important when we have very vibrant community participation, because, you know, oftentimes we get into our small groups and we do this for ourselves, or we do this for us, and by us I mean the small us in that grouping. But certainly community advocacy, moving out there, reaching and touching individuals, 200 persons, 300 persons, or just five of you, when you touch another and you touch another, it becomes exponential. And so we encourage this type of a thing, and that's why here on The Essentials, we always take the time out to highlight individuals. But I want to just, dial back just a little bit and zero in on the individual I'm speaking to, Raydon Poitier, a young man who I met some years ago. At the time I met him, he was a real Rasta man. Now he cut off all his hair. But that's not the big thing. We always joke about that. But an individual who has demonstrated himself consistently to be a go-getter, an individual who has demonstrated himself consistently to be one who will face up to challenges, went to Abaco, almost got blown away in the storm, yada, 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 you know, who have overcome challenges. And here he is today, putting himself forward in an organization where, you know, the truth is, in real terms, he has already surpassed certain level, but has been humble enough to step back and offer himself for presidency in this particular club. How important it is, Raydon, you think, the example that you are setting to the younger individuals around you based on the route that you have taken to this moment, how important that is, and what type of a lesson, the wider community of us out here could draw from your experience? I'm not trying to put you too much on the spot, but I think it's important to highlight exactly who you are and what you stand for.
Thank you very much. The most important thing is not to focus on anybody's pinnacle. Most times we look at somebody and we see their accomplishments and we want the accomplishment. But the most important thing is the journey that they had to go through to get to the accomplishment. So you mentioned my time in Abaco and, you know, having to go through the experience of Hurricane Dorian. All of that helped to create a journey for me. All of that was a part of the journey. So when people look at me today and see see Raydon right now, they don't necessarily know about the things that I have gone through. So me coming back to Nassau, and I started Toastmasters Club 1600 back in 2012. So when I came back to Nassau after Hurricane Dorian, I knew that I had to give back to the club that I started in. And again, I didn't start out as going for the president's position. I started out putting myself back into the line of service, serving as vice president public relations, vice president membership, vice president education, and then to the presidency, because I understood that the journey was more important than the pinnacle. So I want anybody who is listening to me today to realize that you go through the things that you go through in life so that you can prove to yourself that you can do these things. The hardest challenges that you will ever have in your life are for you to prove to yourself that you can overcome them. The fact that those things are inspirational to the other people who may see you or hear your story proves that those things are powerful. The fact that your life can inspire somebody else, that your journey can inspire somebody else, proves that the path that you are on is something special and something that we shouldn't take for granted. So when people look at who Radon is, Radon is a person who has been through many challenges. I'm not a perfect person. I haven't had a perfect life, but I have a great support system. I have a wonderful family. My wife and my son are great. They help to steer me along and make the right decisions as best as I can. And being a part of a wonderful organization like Toastmasters Club 1600 is the backbone. It actually allows me to be surrounded by the positive reinforcements that many of us search for in our lives.
I think that is important. And so even on election day, you know, if you haven't joined yet, it would still be too late for you to join and become a member of the executive, but you can become a member. You can start this very evening. And so we want to encourage persons to take this issue of leadership seriously, because at the end of the day, no matter what you see happening out there, it don't matter the amount of money or the programs or the systems or the initiatives. Those are just tools. At the end of the day, everything starts and stops and rises and falls on leadership. It's about the leader and the ability of those persons to inspire, to cast a vision, to add value to self and then add value to others. That's what gets things done. That's how we move the community. And it's not about a couple of persons over there being the leader or having the ability to be the leader. All of us do at a certain level. And so we are called upon. We are called upon to be leaders. And so I want to thank you very much for being here with me this afternoon, Mr. Radon Poitier. Always a pleasure speaking with you. All the best. And after that interview, I hope the people vote you in as the president of Club 1600. All the best. Take care.
Last word. Thank you for your platform.
Not a problem. Anytime, my friend, you can pass through. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to get into our conversation. We can talk a little bit about this and a little bit about that. We haven't been here for about 2 weeks. What exactly has been happening over that period of time? You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
At Koshrite, our members know that there's a lot to smile about. They know that membership has its privileges. Guaranteed low pricing on every item, every time you shop. Each membership comes with two cards. That's one for you and a free card for a member of your household. Gold card holders earn an annual 2% rebate up to $500. Koshrite members get discounts at other participating businesses, so that's a lot to smile about. Whether it be clothing, appliances, home goods, or groceries, shop at Koshrite, where membership truly has its privileges.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere, on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's. Pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to The Essentials, The Reset. It's time for us to get into our usual conversation. So we're looking forward to hearing from you, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796. So where are you, 52, Sparky, and the rest of the crew? Let's come out and talk about some national issues. What do I want to start with? I want to start with, well, we've been off for a bit. And so we have not, well, I think I was out for 1 week, yeah. So we have not get to kind of cover some of the, you know, the recent current issues. And so I'm just going to kind of run through those and talk around them and share some of my ideas and my thoughts. If you have some views on these, then feel free to step up over the next 1 hour or so that we have and we can, you know, really get into it. I want to start with something which really caught my attention. It was a headline in the Tribune, and it says, Bahamas bond prices don't reflect investor confidence. And this was largely on the basis of an interview that Neil Artnell did with the financial secretary, Mr. Simon Wilson. And the conversation went really around, look, you know, there's some vibrancy. There's some things which are happening here in the Bahamas. We understand that the Bahamian bonds, which are being traded in some instances, are trading at significant discount, which is not a positive thing. And the point which was sought to be made is, look, a lot of persons, a lot of investors are, you know, bullish on the Bahamas. And I think one could readily agree with that. There's evidence that the Bahamas has a spark going at the moment, especially as it relates to cryptocurrency, has created a significant amount of buzz. But there obviously are other areas. When we hear about the potential investments that are in the pipeline. So investors are bullish on the Bahamas. So there is a reasonable level. I don't want to say significant. I want to say reasonable. We can work with that. There is a reasonable level of investor confidence. But the argument which was made was that it does not translate, the bond prices do not translate to reflect that confidence. And it's a very, very interesting conversation. It's a very, very interesting argument because not only in the fact that it is intriguing, but it's a recurring argument. It happens all the time, over and repeatedly by, you know, over multiple years. So Mr. Wilson is not the first person who is saying this. But what is it about this particular statement, which while on the face of it may sound attractive and may pull you in and cause you to knot your brow so that you can start to ask the question, how do I reconcile these two? the performance of the bond and investor confidence. So we have a reasonably performing and a reasonable level of investor confidence, but the bonds are not necessarily aligning with that reasonable level that we observe. And the answer simply is, there's not necessarily any real connection between the two. There could be, but there's not necessarily any real connection between the two. And why would you ask? Because an individual's confidence is really about their willingness, investor confidence, is their willingness to invest in the Bahamas. The willingness to look at the Bahamas and see the things, whether it's the infrastructure or they're coming for the tax planning, whatsoever it is which floats their boat, they see those things as attractive and they want to be here. And that could drive investor confidence from here to the moon and back. The performance of the bonds, though, is really about the ability of the country to repay the bonds, or the view of the market of the ability that the country has to repay the bonds. Now, while investors being in the country may have, and eventually, hopefully, should have a positive impact on that, the confidence alone is not sufficient to translate to a different view of the creditworthiness of the country. What do I mean by that? So just because some people want to come in and invest, it doesn't mean that we're taking in any more taxes. Just because some people came in and actually invest, it doesn't mean that we are taking in significantly more taxes. And consequently, because the decision has already been made, well, the conclusion has already been made, that we are at a place where our ability to repay is constrained, we should not automatically expect that a positive uplift in investor confidence translate to a uplift in creditworthiness. It doesn't translate at all. Some other things have to happen. So let's say there was only two companies in the country. And those two companies pay taxes of collectively $20, yeah, for ease of understanding. And then all of a sudden, five new companies come in. And those five companies pay another $10 each, so we up to $70. Then all of a sudden, the 70 would represent our GDP. Let's use it as GDP. All of a sudden, no, not GDP, government revenue. All of a sudden, government revenue moves from $20 to $70. If the government owed, say, at that time, let's say the government owed about $35 or so, which was more than the money that it was taking in, so couldn't pay that off, then all of a sudden, the $70 now put the country in a position where it can more than adequately service its debt. In this instance, if the bonds were trading on the market and they were under pressure, that they mean they were trading at a discount, the persons who borrowed, who lent those monies to the Bahamas, the Moody's and all of them look at it and say, hey, the stream of revenue coming to the Bahamas has significantly improved. The fiscal space is larger. The fiscal circumstances are better. And consequently, the credit worthiness has changed. We're going to upgrade the rating. And the persons who are now buying the bonds, they say, well, it's less risky. I will take more. I will hold more. I will roll over. The rollover risk changes. And so when we have this, when we have these arguments, I think we have to be very careful to not conflate, issues, even though they are connected at some level. They require attendant action, and they require some other things to kind of fall out in order for the circumstances to change. we must, when we are having these national conversations, we must put them in a context where, you know, it's not easy for, we don't allow the average person to be confused, put it that way. And I'm sure that's not the intent. The intent is to saying, is to say to us, there are a lot of positive things happening here. And there's this negative thing potentially over here, but it's not reflective of these other things which have happened or will happen in short time. But I think we have to go a step further because we have an obligation to explain to persons so that they understand fully what they're dealing with. We have to go a step further to make the connection between the two, because investor confidence and debt servicing is connected by the level of taxation that the country takes in, or the level of fees that the country will take in as a result of any investment activities. What do I mean by that? Let's assume that tomorrow morning, 500,000 big companies set up business in the Bahamas and they pay absolutely no taxes, none. They don't need employees, so they are no workers. But they're operating from right here in the Bahamas, and they're making lots of money. But they pay no taxes. Do you think that the Bahamas credit rating is going to change tomorrow? Absolutely not. So until the fiscal arrangement translates and moves a stream of revenue from those companies to the coffers of the government, its capacity to pay hasn't changed. So on one hand, investor confidence would be going through the roof, totally through the roof, because, you know, it's a 500 gazillion of them turn up. But on the other hand, there has been no change in the fiscal arrangement such that you could positively impact the creditworthiness. And so when we look at these things, we have to really create a balance in our discussions so that we do not kind of drift away from what the fundamentals are and what the real issues are that we face in fixing the country going forward. Because right now where we sit, the biggest thing right now that we need is more money in the government coffers. And we see some very interesting thing popping up today on the on our timeline or news line. So some of the big things which have been happening is the digital asset, cryptocurrency. We want to talk about that. There was a big conference, very valuable for the country. I think this is a very positive time to be alive, certainly. It's a very positive place for the Bahamas to be, having taken the bull by the horn, if you will, and went out and created the DARE Act a couple of years ago, and now has put itself at the forefront in many ways, certainly at the forefront of the Caribbean, but in many ways at the forefront of the wider Americas and maybe even the wider world, because once you build something, it's always easier maybe to renovate and add onto it than starting from scratch. And the Bahamas is certainly recognized as a leader in this regard. I remember when we have our risk and regulatory outlook earlier this year, we had a speaker out of one of the smaller islands, St. Martin. And, you know, this was a discussion. This was a point that she brought to the fore, how valuable what the Securities Commission and the DARE Act would represent for the Bahamas. And we see it right now. I just want to, in this moment, tie that possibility to the argument or to the discussion that we had before. And that is the issue of investor confidence and the ability to manage our finances. As we navigate these, as we build and grab at these opportunities, we have to be mindful, we have to be careful that the Bahamas doesn't become a factor in the strategy of these big companies without these big companies becoming a important part of the strategy of the Bahamas. What do I mean by that? So persons will look at the Bahamas and say, it's an attractive environment, it's a good place to live, the regulatory regime is well-balanced and proportional, maybe compared to where they were, it's a lighter touch, there are less impediments, we are open and ready. And so they make that trek. So the Bahamas becomes an important factor in their strategic thrust, in order for them to achieve their strategic objectives. That becomes an easy decision to make. However, if the move into digital assets, if the move into attracting cryptocurrency businesses to the Bahamas does not translate to beyond the usual, we get some jobs, and I understand that the people who get the jobs there really, really have some jobs. They get some really nice pay. Kudos to them. That's how it should be. But understand that all of that have an attendant effect, because high salary will kind of pull the average up, put some pressure on other companies and that sort of thing. But at a more macro level, if revenue is not moving, and by revenue I mean taxes, if some means of revenue is not moving commensurate with the quantum of earnings that these entities have, and I'm not advocating corporation tax here. I'm simply saying we're going into almost pristine environment. It's new. It's different. It don't look like the normal other things. They selling fancy things that they call money, cryptocurrency. And they're making money and they're making profit. But if from this new digital asset space, which the Prime Minister heralded as the frontier and the vortex to which we are going to create the economic recovery, or at least significantly help the economic recovery, there has to be a demonstrated position that there is going to be taxes emanating from those operations, from those activities. Because if that doesn't happen, we go back to where we started in this conversation, where we have high investor confidence and still have a low credit rating, because the money hasn't changed. It's very, very important that as we chart the course and look at how we are dealing with, whether it's tax reform or whether we or how we are dealing with the reforms to get to that 25% to GDP, we take these things into consideration. And the country, the man on the street, start to understand and make the linkage between these two. Because you know why? The average guy out there saying, well, you know, here's these big things coming, and then you still asking me to pay more taxes. Why should I pay more taxes? And it's an issue of equity and fairness which creeps in, which I think we can close a circle on that when we get to that. In the news report today, when we see $1 billion out in tax arrears. But even more than that, the $1 billion, because I don't know how long it took to get to $1 billion, way, way, way more important than that is what appears to be a prevailing and pervasive culture of persons literally evading tax by underreporting, by not reporting. That is, in a tax system, in any tax system, the prevalence of that is eroding, it's undermining, and it's dangerous for the country. Dangerous for me too, because I am the type of person who will, if you charge me taxes, I know by law I have to pay it, I won't have to pay it, but you will end up charging me more because the other guy is not paying his fair share. And so that report today was very powerful, not because of the amount. I look at the amount, yes, it would be good if we can get the amount. That represents about 10% of our debt at the moment. What a big dent we could make if we collect every single cent by tomorrow morning. 10%. But sometimes we get kind of, you know, excited about the dollar figure. But if we look below the surface, if we look below the surface and see what the insidious effect of the behaviors which drive the money to that level is having or could be having on a go-forward basis, we might just very well start cringing. It's fundamentally, fundamentally important that we don't take that type of a news lightly. It's fundamentally important that we are now aware that the authorities are aware that this is happening. It's fundamentally important that they are not only saying these things and making them known, but they are using this as a basis for anchoring reforms. Why is this important? I keep using that word. Why is this important? It's important because we are at a place in time in the Bahamas where we are asking questions about the adequacy and the sufficiency of our tax system. Yeah. So if the Bahamas is due $20 in tax but only getting $15 because some guy around the road is not reporting and some guy around the road is under-reporting, and then we are making argument that we need more and we may possibly have to impose other measures, we could be doing ourselves an injustice. The truth of the matter is that we've been harping that we're not getting our $15, let's use 15 as the target, when in fact the universe out there with proper reporting, with proper enforcement, and enforcement includes making sure that the people who have assessed and actually assessed pay, and those persons who fail to pay feel the pressure, whether it's through lien or garnishing or whatsoever means. The possibility is that it's more than 15. The possibility is that when you bring in the under-reporting and the no-reporting, the number is actually 20 or 25. And you suddenly realize that the system that you thought was inadequate may at least be way more adequate than you thought it was. So it may not necessarily reach the percentage benchmark, which is ideal, but it's much more than that. How does that change the equation? It changes the equation in you can now be in a position to have a better conversation with the populace. Because rather than our need to get from 18 or 19% to 25%, we're actually closer to 25%. And therefore, the burden, the additional, the incremental burden that anyone might bear spread across the total population is that much easier. The appetite for that is that much easier. Easier to take. And so that conversation can happen. The government doesn't, or the administration doesn't necessarily feel the strain or feel the political tension to have that conversation because it's easier. And I'm not saying that this is exactly how it is. I'm saying the possibility exists because we have a system where some persons are gaming. But it goes beyond just the gaming itself, yeah? These revelations are indicative of weaknesses in the system. They are indicative of weaknesses in the system. They are indicative of insufficient checks and balance or enforcement. And by enforcement, I mean at the other end, you have a couple of extremes where you say, come pay, I encourage you to pay, please pay, I am going to make you pay, or you haven't paid, now you're going to lose some value. So on one end, it will be moral suasion and encouragement. And at the other end, it's supposed to be punishment. Because if you don't do that, if you don't have a system which works like that, then you inadvertently or unwittingly help to reinforce a culture where this type of a behavior becomes normalized. And when that behavior becomes normalized, it robs the country of important resources, of important capacity. It also, just based on biblical principle, based on the whole idea of justice and fairness, it gives other individuals within the same competitive arena greater competitive advantage over the people they're competing with. So I sell $100 in goods. You sell $100 in goods. I am supposed to pay $20 in taxes. You're supposed to pay $20 in taxes. I pay my $20 and I'm left with $80. You don't. You go back to the store, you go back to the wholesaler, and you buy $100 worth of good. I can only buy $80. You see? You are effectively, or that business is effectively using taxpayers' money to fund its operation. The same taxpayers who will be called upon to make good any type of shortfall which arise as a result of him, her, them using the money in that way. It's wrong. It's not fair. And the moment, and this is where from the country point of view, and I'm focusing on the country point of view, not the individual. This is where, from the country point of view, it cannot ignore this type of a behavior, is that when you study taxation, when you study the history of taxing and taxation, a couple of things become apparent. When taxes get too high, where people feel that it's at a level where it's too high and that burden is too much for them, they find ways to circumvent it. Additionally, when they look at the system and they believe that the system is unfair, where they can, whether they can do so clinically or not, identify pockets or identify circumstantially that there are persons out there, entities out there who are getting away with what they can get away with, they normalize that. You know, we are equitable people. It's just like work. You bring me and you say, I'm going to pay you $10 to lift up 10 things. And then you bring in the next guy and you say, I'm going to pay you $15 to lift up these 10 things. Well, I will lift them 10 things. It just take 1.5 more time. And you end up paying me $15. Unconsciously, subconsciously, we do these things. We normalize what we consider to be unfair circumstances. So I believe that the government, with this particular pronouncement today, which was in the newspaper, should really take it to heart and really start to think, because I know that there is an ongoing look at our tax regime and our tax reform, but should really, really give true consideration as to how this may actually be a reality that plays positively in its hands, positively, and can be used to benefit the government at less detriment to us out here who are taxpayers. We have a caller on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hibbert. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic. And you?
I'm doing okay. It's always good to hear you, Mr. Edwards. You're such a brilliant man. I mean, you right off the chain. And I mean, the question in my mind today, don't take me wrong now, Mr. Edwards, right? You are very intelligent. Don't take me wrong, right? Mr. Edwards?
Hey.
How come your country ain't using you, man?
I don't live there.
No, because Mr. Edwards, I'm saying this, like, because I mean, like, you know, plenty, man. How come your country ain't using you?
I don't live there, man. You
and all our business, you know all our business. I know you powerful, man.
No, I'm not a powerful man.
People don't feel jealous. You just giving us all this information and being so much into, like, well, payment,
no,
politics,
no,
payment,
no,
finance and all that.
No, I'm the least amongst them.
Why you say that?
Because I am, and I live here, so this is where I spend my time, and I think this is where, if I have something I think I have to say, I should share it. Whether it is Whether it is used or not, that's up to the people. Yeah. I'm just sharing. That's all.
Now, why I say jealous is because, I mean, it's like a marriage. Because people from different nationalities have a tendency, basically, like, well, to be clan that's signed to their country and more like to say, well, you know, look at the state of your country and all this good information they're given to us. Being rich where your country is, but your country is, I mean, your dollar is sometimes been devalued. You have more experience with that.
Yeah.
And our dollar ain't devalued yet. But you're giving us all this vital information. But it's paradoxical because, I mean, like, you may say they're not jealous, right? But you can only say that for yourself.
No, not at all.
Just like any marriage or relationship with people. People just get jealous and think of other people when they're doing things and look at their situation, be at home or there.
I don't believe so. I don't believe so. If I have the opportunity to spend some time in Jamaica and I have the opportunity to speak on the radio or wherever, I will talk about the stuff relating to Jamaica. But because this is really transferable information, knowledge. But, you know, we do what we can, where we can, how we can, as best as we can. I can't tell you to accept it. I can't tell you how to use it. You know, it's totally up to you.
And another thing, Amar, you're some big hunter in Chamber of Commerce or something?
No, I'm not. I'm a member of the Chamber through my company. I used to be on the board. I'm no longer on the board.
Okay, but you, Amar, just got a promotion recently, a couple months ago, something like that?
No, not a promotion. I think people are mistaken, man. So I was appointed to sit as the chair of the Organization for Responsible Governance. It is a volunteer position. I do not get paid at all for any aspect of that work. It's national service. And I do it because it was an opportunity. Having left the chamber, I looked for some place where I could continue to do what I was doing. And there was an opportunity there. I went there and, you know, enjoying it so far.
Yeah, you're a brilliant man, though. I mean, I definitely am. You're brilliant. But my irony, like I still say my irony is, man, you need to go and
I think in a backhanded way you kind of run in me, but that's all right.
Because mom is dead, I can tell you I understand you, man.
Oh, I think in a backhanded way you're running me, but that's fine.
No, man,
I'm going to give you a project. Yes, I want you to go find somebody down there, somebody important, and call him and tell him, come listen to him, and then call him and give him some. I will take it from there after you do that, all right?
I'm going to tell you there, listen up. You have a good show and you enjoy it, sir.
Yeah, man, you take care. I think we had a caller, but we lose that one. Certainly call back, caller. I think we should take a break here, and then when we come back, we jump on these issues. But certainly, you see how important it is. We started from investor confidence, and we got all the way to taxation. When we have this conversation, what we try to do is not just to talk, but to see how best we can link the things together, to let them make sense. I'm not saying I'm perfect, and I'm not saying I get everything right. I've done things on the radio, and people call me later and say, that didn't go quite so. I always come back and fix it. But the fact of the matter is, let's have the conversations in a fundamental way, in such a way that we are seeking always, always, to put ourselves, the country that is, in the best possible position. This is Essential to Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Time for the Essential.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
At Cosrite, our members know that there's a lot to smile about. They know that membership has its privileges. Guaranteed low pricing on every item, every time you shop. Each membership comes with two cards. That's one for you and a free card for a member of your household. Gold card holders earn an annual 2% rebate up to $500. Cartwright members get discounts at other participating businesses. So that's a lot to smile about. Whether it be clothing, appliances, home goods, or groceries, shop at Cartwright, where membership truly has its privileges.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back. We're having a little bit of a conversation about this and that, but mostly around financial and economic issues impacting the country. We were missing last week, so we're just kind of catching up and going through some of the headlines. So we talk about investor confidence. We talk about credit rating. We talk about the need to tie whatsoever is coming in through taxation so that we can impact the credit rating. At the end of the day, we looked a little bit at the taxation and the news coming out. May sound like bad news because persons are not paying, but believe me, I see a huge, huge silver lining around that particular dark cloud. So as we look at this whole issue of crypto asset, the ability to revolutionize and change the financial services system, you start hear about traditional FI, CFI and DeFi and all sorts of stuff. I think it's such an exciting time to be alive, honestly. And an exciting time to be in the Bahamas, because the Bahamas has taken this bull by the horn and running with it. And me, from my own self, I'm not too sure where I fit in yet, but that's part of my journey. That's part of my goal. I'm trying to find out how I can fit into this whole thing. We have another call on the line. Go ahead. Good afternoon. I'm doing great. And you?
Not bad. I think I heard you do seminars, do you?
Yeah, I do seminars. I have an annual event where we raise money for scholarships, and we do leadership awards. We put on a show last year we did it for 2 years, so yeah.
How many of those have you had in, you're from Jamaica?
Yes, I have.
How many of those have you had in Jamaica, say, in the last year?
In the last year? Well, the seminars that we have over the last 2 years, we have done them virtually. And basically, they were beamed from here, but they basically were in Jamaica and the Bahamas. The bulk of the persons, so we had 500, 600 persons who attend. I think the bulk of the persons would be from the Bahamas. So let's say this year when we had about 600 persons, if we split that down, I would say maybe about 400 was from the Bahamas and the other 200 was from Jamaica.
And most of your seminars are on taxation?
No. Those seminars are really on growth and personal development, leadership, how to overcome tragedies, how to just become a better person, how to live your life and be good. Otherwise than that, I present, if someone asks me to, I present on issues like risk management or corporate governance or ethics or some accounting-related thing, which is my actual profession, yeah?
Well, I was trying to go there because you almost had me, but since it came out of your own mouth then, why most of the times I do hear you talk about taxation for us, but you just said you don't really do taxation for your own country.
For my own country?
Yes.
Which country that?
Jamaica.
Who tell you Jamaica is my country?
I thought I asked you and you said you're from Jamaica.
Yeah, I am from Jamaica. Why I do taxation? There's taxation in Jamaica.
No, but I'm saying most every time I hear you have your shows on taxation, it's about the Bahamas and not about Jamaica.
Yeah, I do not talk about Jamaica. Like I said to the other caller, I do not live in Jamaica. My focus is on the Bahamas. The Bahamas have its own set of challenges. Jamaica have its own set of challenges.
So why do you choose taxation for the Bahamas, but you do have seminars in Jamaica, but you don't choose seminars like the gentleman said?
I don't do tax training. I don't do economics training. I have a conversation on the radio, and we talk about all sorts of issues. If you listen to me on the radio on Wednesday.
You're trying me for loop.
No,
here's the deal.
I don't get your point, though. What is the point that you want to make?
Get close to my point. I don't have any problem with... I have a problem with taxation in any form. Here's my point.
Why do you have a problem?
I understand that taxation is needed in most countries.
Yeah.
I understand that. But my thing is, when I don't like people who always driven to taxation. I believe in price hike. Yes, if something has cost $10 yesterday, prices go up.
Mm-hmm.
So charge me. So if you have to pay more taxes, I mean, let's say border prices or whatever.
Yeah.
Customs and whatever. I could see you saying, well, yesterday customs was charging me $50. So today they charge $60 because it's caused more in the States, especially with this recession. I don't mind you saying, well,
yeah,
the price will go up $10. That's why I say I don't believe in taxation. I believe if something needs to go up, it needs to go up. Taxation is, to me, a lousy way of people taking money out of people's pockets.
No. There are a lot of things about tax which you and I do not like. But let's get to the fundamental. The reason a country has tax is so that the government can fund its operation, because they have no other place to get money from other than borrowing or taxing you.
My point there, that's the lousiness now, because you started something about investors. What about investors?
Huh?
You started something about the investors.
Yeah.
Right? What about investors?
Let's
leave the tax over for a minute. You're saying the only way we can get taxes is through, get the money is through taxes.
Yeah.
What about investments?
What investment?
Like the tourist, foreign investments and stuff. The other stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, but okay. So, let me help you understand a foreign direct. So let's say you are a foreign direct investor, right?
And
you came in here and you invest $1 million, right?
Right.
How does the government get money?
Well, government get money through taxes from the investors. That's where you go in. I don't have a problem with that. And I don't have a problem over paying taxes out of statement. But I'm talking about, I want to know if you were talking about taxing regular poor people.
No. And I don't think you was listening to me carefully.
Right.
Because the sum total of the conversation I just had, right,
right,
is in favor of the small guy, right? I'm basically saying, when we see a number of persons not paying their taxes, yeah?
Right.
Persons avoiding taxes or underreporting, it puts the pressure on the small guy. Because you and I will have to go to the shop and buy bread, and we can't afford to... There's no way we can avoid paying VAT on bread, yeah?
Right.
But if another guy over there sells the bread and then on the report, he doesn't pay the tax to the government, what do you think the government is going to do later on? He's going to increase the price, the tax on bread, and my tax is going to go up, right?
Right.
And I'm going to be in a worse position. So the overall argument that I was trying to make, I don't know if I, obviously I wasn't successful.
No, I get it now, because that's what I was trying to get. Yeah. That's why I called you, because I was trying to get you to clarify that. Exactly.
Right. The overall argument I'm trying to make is government,
right,
now you understand what is happening.
Yes.
Go fix these things so that the pressure don't have to flow back on the regular guy.
Man.
You see what I'm saying?
That's what I was trying to figure out what you were saying. I heard you, and I was trying to really figure, because it didn't sound too clear to me. So I said,
I got you. Yeah, but you took me through the mulberry bush and made me lose all of my minutes. I could have told you that in 2 seconds. Yeah,
yeah, but I agree. I understand you now. But here I still have a problem in a way with like how you use the bread basket items, because I would like to know who owned this business.
No, I just said bread. I'm not talking about bread basket.
No, this is not you
bread.
Now. This is something I'm talking about, something different that I have on my mind.
Okay, go ahead.
Not you right now. And I'll end with this. it's getting to the point with this taxation. The question needs to be asked by business people. I don't know why they're so quiet. Who really owned this business? Because guess what happened? If you if you're saying there's 13 items can only be government regulation on items 13% or whatever the percent are. How you could come back and tell me, but I only sell bread at a certain price? Because of price control. Who owned these businesses? You already capped me at 13% or whatever percent. Would give you the right to come back. You see what I'm saying? If you let taxes, if you let these people get away with so many taxes. But listen, I understand you. You have a nice day because I have something to do too.
Yeah, man. Right, thanks, you take man. Care. It's certainly great engaging with you.
Yes, sir. Okay.
All right. Take care. And that's why you have to be sometimes be very careful. You know, you're not always as clear as you think you are. So I appreciate you calling in and saying you didn't really get that. But, you know, at least for today, I think we are on the same side. Inflation and interest rates is a big issue right now, a topical issue. Inflation, from the perspective that we have this long drawn out war, is obviously going to be way longer than we expected. We thought this was going to be done in 2 weeks. Maximum, but that's not happening because this is my version. This is World War III. And I said to someone recently, why is it that you expect World War III to look anything like World War II? Because after all, it's 2022 and we're living in the world where cryptocurrency is a thing. Why can't a World War III be a situation where the rest of the world take all their guns and stuff and give it to one man and tell him, shoot it at the other man while the other man beats you up? Because that's basically what's happening in Ukraine. The West and the rest of the world is significantly supporting Ukraine with aid and weapons. And I know you may have a philosophical lean into, you know, who is wrong or who is right. From my perspective, I just don't like war full stop. I'm not taking no sides. I just don't like war full stop. I am of the view that if I can stop the war, I'm not going to fight you and kill off my people just because I want to win an unwinnable war. But be that as it may, World War III in the version that I see it is taking place, and it is driving a significantly highly inflationary environment. And that was bad because we know we see the gas going up, we see the food going up, and it's impacting our pockets in a significant way. But it gets worse. It gets worse from the point of view that now we saw the Bank of England increase their interest rate, I think by 1% or up to 1%, somewhere there, but it's a significant move. And then yesterday, the U.S. Treasury increased its rate by 0.5% with the commitment to look at it again in June, and they're possibly looking to get all the way up to 0.75% or 1%. That is significant. And it's significant for this reason. The Bahamas has a lot of debt, and the Bahamas have some variable debt foreign currency loans. And the Bahamas may also, in the future, near future, need foreign currency loan. And that increase in interest rate imposes a cost on our ability to borrow. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead. Caller, you're on the essentials. Go ahead.
Hello, hello, hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, Mr. Edwards. I was prompted to call, you know, right? My daughter's on she's studying accountants and finance at the University of the Bahamas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, I guess, you know, I was telling her one of your seminars that she manages money well. As a matter of fact, I don't think I'll be a granddad anytime soon. I'll be 58 in August. But I kind of share the sentiments with the guy with the taxes, right, Mr. Edwards?
Yeah.
You know, of course, VAT is a very regressive tax. I'm looking at my
it
scenario
is.
In particular. A small business person, and the reciprocity stinks. You know, all right, just give me an example. All right, I pay national insurance. I pay life insurance also. So the thing is with the national insurance, I look at it, when I go to buy my products, I get charged VAT. When I go in the post, I go to the post shop, I charge VAT. I mean, I can't charge the people VAT, right? But here it is now, me and every citizen alike, even the illegal immigrants, when they go in the store, they buy an item and they pay VAT, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the chronology. The prices have gone up, on some items up to 100%. So the government revenue has increased. But what I'm looking at is they're always crying and complaining. I know they need more taxes, but the tax burden is uneven. And most of the onus is on the poor people. And so there's no reciprocity. The services at the hospital, the government services. You know, I went to the hospital the other day, and I had as a young man, I had a few incidents with the police, like whereby some of the incidents I've been in, and you go to the hospital, you was involved in an accident or some mishap, and you had to go and say, you're in the support. And I went there the other day to get something, and I had a problem with the credit card thing, and they tell me, say they go look and see how much I owe the hospital, and they told me how much. I say, oh, the hospital what? And this is the attitude that the government is taking, you know. I mean, you pay for, I don't have a problem, like language talking about, I don't have a problem with paying for admission and beds and all those stuff. I pay for it, but what I'm saying is, there's no reciprocity for the average citizen. What are we paying the people for? This, everybody, you know, but road services, what? We need reciprocity from the government. The government is not fiscally prudent. They're not frugal. All right, take, for instance, the price of gas went up. It's about $7 now. The government, they still get people riding around.
Ain't quite $7, yeah.
Duties alone, doing all kinds of things on the taxpayer's gas. Yeah. Everybody needs to ride a government car. The government needs to be more frugal with the beam and people money. They're not doing that. And, you know, Prime Minister Brave Davis is a very generous person. So, you know, this is really a failing adventure. This third world region is on.
Well, you know, 52... We are not, I don't think we are doing everything as right as we can. I don't think we are at a place of critical mass where we can correct the things which are not right.
Yeah, but, you know,
and move forward.
I like to get this in. The thing is, third world leaders, we are denying the influence of the oligarchical influence on our economy.
Who determined that we are third world leaders? Some people call us that and we accept it.
Construct, you know, I don't buy the first world,
well,
second
you,
world,
third well, you
world
stop,
man-made decision.
You,
I'm just using it because
no,
that's the way
52.
The human geography.
Yeah, 52. You stop calling us third world leaders. We have leaders.
But that's a way for me to say what I mean. I
understand,
because they're subservient.
We buy too much.
To the United Nations. They're signing us right back into slavery, man. I don't really want to be misled, you know.
Yeah.
These people, we are pathetic. We failed at the West Indian Federation. We failed at becoming a West Indian or Caribbean bloc. We're failing at everything. We're failing our citizens. Blessed, man.
Yeah, blessings. But, you know, all of that don't have nothing to do with them people of the world. We fail at the West Indian Federation because the people within the Caribbean are selfish. They don't want to come together. We fail because somebody says
if you'd like to
12
call,
minus 1 equals 0, you know, which was a really, really, egregious thing to say at that point in time. We try CARICOM, we try single market. We are not failing because of other persons. We're failing because we have failed to recognize the greatness in our collective self and a willingness to come together to make the changes where we can operate. And by we, I mean, you know, in this instance, kind of like the Caribbean and, you know, the diaspora countries. That's why we're failing. But I think we should stop thinking about ourselves through the eyes of others where they see us as third world, because third world leaders are expected to behave maybe third rate. I don't know. So let me kind of wrap this up when we talk about the inflation and 52 touch on something which is very, very important. The increase in interest rate by these countries are designed to tame inflation, to bring it back down. The effect of that is that they're discouraging consumption. So persons are not chasing stuff. So it's supply and demand, the more demand, the greater the prices. When you reduce the demand, the price come down. But that has an effect on increasing the cost of living. For some persons, their mortgages will go up, they get credit, especially people who buy into our tourist market. So there could be some effect. I don't expect that to be big. The era which is very important is this. Because we have a regressive tax system currently, the increases that we are experiencing as a result of inflation translate to additional revenue for the government. Simple. A thing costs $100, the government get 10%. It now costs $150, the government get $10. It now costs $150. The government gets $15. So revenue is accelerating. The extent to which and the speed at which inflation is tamed, and that inflation, that tamed inflation, becomes imported into the Bahamas and prices regularized. They go back to the level we say in the Bahamas, the prices never go down. But the extent to which those prices re-regularize represent a deflation, a potential deflation of the pace at which government revenue is currently increasing. I want you to pay a little bit of attention to that. Currently, today was reported $210 million ahead. But pay attention to the fact that a regressive system thrives on inflation. And to the extent that that inflation is reduced, it is doing two things, or will do two things for the Bahamas. It will reduce the level of revenue that the government takes in, and it will increase the cost of debt, because the thing which is taming the inflation is through a monetary policy of increasing the interest rate, a double whammy, potentially. So we have to keep our eyes on these things, and we have to make sure that we dot them and we connect the dots, because, you know, it's a multiplicity of issues, almost like the analogy of peeling back an onion. Yeah, there are many things there. At some point in time, you take off all the dry part of the onion, you get deep into it, and you start to cry, because that's what onions do. And we will get there. We have to confront these. So there could be potential pressure on disposable income from persons emerging from our markets. As I said, I don't expect that to be big. There could be reduction in government revenue that have its own implication. As a result of the increase in costs of interest and all this other thing, and because of the impact of inflation, the government could be called upon to put out more money in terms of social spend, and that have its own implications. We see here where there is a big furor about VAT and the zero-rated and exempt item on breadbasket. Zero and exempt being removed from breadbasket items. These are important issues to not ignore. The zero-rated on breadbasket items lead you directly into the potential or the possibility that the government will have to supplement on a social side some people who are in a vulnerable grouping, because when inflation hit those goods, they become marginally or maybe even significantly more expensive than if they were at a higher rate of VAT and had the exempt or the zero rated classification. So here is where the policy position will need to be calibrated in the interest of the public, in the interest of the people, especially in the interest of vulnerable population, close to poverty line, persons who are struggling to survive. And then we have, and this is the last one I'm going to touch on, the issue of NIB and the stated need for NIB to kind of correct itself. And this has been said over and repeatedly a number of times, but there is clearly a reluctance to do so at this time, given the additional pressures which taxpayers are facing. So I just want to take this and put this in a nice tight bow, especially for my friend who called me to clarify the taxation issue. If we fix the issues which came out in the report today, such that the little man no longer have that great burden because all of the people who are supposed to pay are paying, then the government, the administration, may be in a better position to impose a lower tax on or lower charge on us for NIB, such that we can get NIB moving and functional for the future, because it's an absolutely very, very critical and important institution, and we can't allow that fund to run out. But all of these things are connected, and we can either create a virtuous cycle or a very vicious one. Let's not underestimate the impact of any one of them. Let's look at them fundamentally. Let's talk about them fundamentally. Let's see what the spillovers are. Let's see what the connections and the connectivities are. And let's deal with them as if it's one single onion. We want to get to the center of that. And we must get through the part where we are going to cry. It's not going to be painless. And the decision has to be made. But we have to do the things which need to be done. And we have to do the right things. And I want to leave it there. Today is the 5th of May. It's my first daughter's birthday. Soyini Edwards, I want to say to you, I know you way over in Mr. Big Man land, but be good. You're a good child. You're a good lady. Continue to grow. Continue to be a useful element of the universe. Continue to love people. Continue to work for them. Continue to support them. That's your calling. That's why you're here, to make a difference. And I just want to say to all of the persons who have been listening to us out there, one love, walk good, be good. And in everything you do, always think about it this way. How can I make my life, then the life of others, and ultimately the country, a better place? One love, Ubuntu. Good night.